Chapter 12.
Cook!
Miller yelled. He pulled free of Pirate and looked over the edge. On the floor, 20 feet below, Cook, on all fours, struggled to regain his feet. At first, Miller thought he was injured. But as Cook strained to stand as if fighting a heavy backpack, Miller realized that he was simply behaving like he was a great deal heavier. Close to the artifact, his gravity had increased. For a moment, Miller forgot to breathe. He looked again at the hundreds of skeletons. All of them appeared to have been hammered flat. All were sprawled out in a spread eagle posture. And the closer to the artifact, the more extremely they were spread.
Gravity,
breathed Miller.
It's gravity.
He leaned over to yell at Cook. A hand grabbed him from behind, but he shook it off.
Cook!
He called. He was interrupted by another blast of the conch trumpets. All eyes went to the chief. She took a red-feathered spear from an attendant and raised it over her head. She spoke in a voice as hard and clear as the trumpet, and then, so no one could fail to understand, she pointed beyond the artifact. Just on the other side of the artifact, Miller saw the outline of a doorway, backlit by daylight. The meaning was clear. Make it through the doorway, and you're free. And, judging from the bones, nobody had made it yet. The heavy gravity field generated by the artifact had smashed them all to paste. And now it was Cook's turn. Miller tried again to warn him.
Cook!
But it was too late. Cook, on his feet now, had begun to stagger away from the wall. The crowd noise rose as the villagers egged him on with a two-syllable chant. Miller didn't bother to attempt a translation. He leaned out as far as he could and called again.
Cook!
But the noise was too loud. Cook, moving away, couldn't hear him. Miller put all he had into one ear-splitting yell.
Gravity!
If Cook heard, he gave no sign. He moved slowly, keeping his distance from the artifact, studying it as he made a half-circle out to the middle of the lower floor. He went no closer than he already was, but Miller could see that his steps were dragging, and the extra weight was close to exhausting him already, after only a few minutes. Halfway across, Cook swiveled his head to look up at the ledge where the chief stood. Then, with an almost comical double-take, he looked down at a point under the chief's perch, at floor level. Miller shaded his eyes and strained to see. At first, he could make out nothing at all. Then he saw it. A second doorway. Whether it led out of the volcano into safety, or just into another room, didn't matter. It was a way out, a way to get off the floor. Cook realized it too. He took a step toward the doorway. But before he could take another, the villagers' chant turned ugly. Like a crowd at a boxing match when they suspect a fix. He took another step, and they began to pelt him with rocks. Covering his head with his arms, he tried another step, but the shower of debris was now so intense he could not move. He took a step backward, and the rock shower stopped. Cook stepped forward again. Rocks. He stepped back. The rocks stopped. He looked up at Miller and shook his head. He pointed toward the artifact, and Miller nodded helplessly. Cook looked at him for a long moment until the crowd began to sound angry again. Then, half lifting one arm in a wave, he turned toward the artifact and began to walk. Except, walk was not the word for it. With each step closer, Cook's movements got slower, heavier. He was frowning in concentration, keeping his eyes fixed on the artifact as if for some clue. Sweat poured from him and onto the rock floor. Miller, even from his spot on the ledge, could see that Cook's breath was rapid and shallow, like a man with emphysema. But Cook moved closer, and closer still. He was almost halfway to the artifact when his legs gave out. He did not fall over so much as simply collapse toward the floor. Miller could see from his expression that Cook thought he was still walking when he looked at the ground. He was surprised to see his hand was resting on it and tried to get up. He couldn't. He tried again, but the weight on him was just too much. He began to crawl forward on all fours, panting desperately for air. The crowd was yelling now, sensing the end, straining forward with excitement. Cook lifted his head with tremendous effort and looked around, his eyes fixed on one of the four strange rectangular panels that lay on the ground. For a long moment, he stared at the panel, panting. Then, with a colossal effort of will, he turned to look at Miller. Cook's tongue hung from his mouth, swollen, and his eyes were bulging. His breathing was painful for Miller to watch, coming in short, rapid gasps that were obviously not doing the job. His face was red and swelling. He was clearly near death, and Miller knew there was not a damn thing he could do about it, except look into his friend's eyes and share this last moment with him. But Cook had more in mind than a last glance. Using almost the last of his strength, he turned very slowly to face the rectangular panel, then turned back toward Miller. When Miller did not respond, Cook repeated the movement. The crowd began to throw rocks again. Very few of them came close. They were mostly stopped by the gravity field. But a few of the villagers, Pirate among them, were strong enough to arc their rocks very close. One of them smashed into Cook's leg, and he collapsed. He tried to straighten out again onto all fours, but another rock caught him on the back, and the amplified weight of it crushed him to the floor, face first. For a moment, he couldn't move. Then he slowly began to crawl on his belly, dragging his inert legs behind him, moving toward the rectangular panel. Why? Miller wondered. Why were the panels so important that Cook had invited the hammer smash blow of the rocks? What was their significance? Cook was nearer the panel now, but he was also 10 feet closer to the artifact, and the proximity was proving to be too much. His crawl slowed, then stopped. His fingers scrabbled at the rock floor for a few moments. Miller could see his back heaving spasmodically as he fought for breath. Then he was still. A small pool of blood seeped from his nostrils and began to puddle around his head.
The artifact chose that moment to freeze time again for what seemed like
hours. The picture was frozen. Cook on the floor, head resting in blood, his sheath with her spear upraised, red feathers standing out, the crowd on its toes in excitement. Then time flickered into gear again. Cook was still as he'd been, but the crowd was in a new position now, one of anticipation, and all eyes were on Miller. The chief nodded to the trumpeter. Once again, the conch blasted, and again the chief raised the red-feathered spear over her head. She repeated her short, strong words and pointed to the doorway beyond the artifact. Pirate grabbed Miller's arm, almost glowing with eagerness. He twisted and began to shove Miller toward the edge. The death of Cook, the strange and completely unsettling reality of the artifact, and Pirate's drooling anxiety to see him dead all combined to overwhelm Miller. He snapped. Pivoting quickly on his heel, he caught Pirate's wrist and twisted it into an arm lock, driving a knee into the man's groin with the same motion. Pirate dropped his spear and doubled over in pain, as Miller took Pirate's elbow with his other hand and levered Pirate face first into the rocky floor of the ledge. He put a foot on Pirate's neck then, maintaining his hold on the arm.
"That's enough,"
he said, bending so Pirate could hear him.
"Bataoa,"
he added, making a guess at what the word enough might be in this island's dialect. Pirate struggled and Miller increased his pressure. Pirate hissed in pain but stopped moving. Then Miller felt a sharp sting on his right arm as one of the other guards nudged him with the point of a spear. Blood ran down Miller's arm now. The guard jerked his head, indicating that he had to release Pirate. Reluctantly, he did. Pirate stood, brushed himself off, and stepped toward Miller with an evil gleam in his eye. There was a small trickle of blood running from his nose, and his lip and cheek were scraped and cut too. Clearly, he planned to even the score. But the guards with the spear stepped between them. He spoke one short, sharp sentence. The words were simple, and Miller was almost sure he understood.
"No,"
the guard said.
"His meat is for Koo."
Pirate stood still for a moment, still eager to avenge himself upon Miller. The conch sounded, however, and Pirate turned toward the chief, who was glaring at him. They locked eyes for a long moment. Then Pirate shrugged, stepped back, and retrieved his spear, pointing it at Miller. He nodded down to the floor where Cook lay dead. Miller didn't wait to give Pirate another chance. With a quick smile, he said,
"Say hello to Yuki for me,"
and was rewarded with a flush of anger from Pirate. It wasn't much, but that and the good feeling he still had from driving Pirate's face into the rock would have to be enough. Miller turned and began to climb down off the ledge. The crowd called out its approval as he made his way down with no help from the guards. Miller barely heard them. His mind was racing furiously, trying to find some handle for the problem of the artifact, some way to think about the thing that would allow him to understand it enough to survive it. It didn't matter right now what the artifact was, or whether Cook was truly a future being sent to find it, or just a deranged Jay Cook. All that mattered was that the artifact was here, and was lethal. And he could either approach it and find a way to survive, or let the crowd stone him to death. Gravity, he reminded himself. It increased gravity. The closer you got to it, the heavier you got. And you couldn't stay away, or the crowd would pelt you with rocks. So you had to move closer, which meant you had to get heavier, which meant that he might last a little longer than Cook had, but sooner or later, he too would be crushed by his own weight. He was only a little more than halfway down to the lower floor, and already he could feel his weight increase. It seemed like he was carrying an extra 75 pounds. Miller looked down. He was about 6 feet above the ground now, normally not much of a drop. But if he jumped down at this weight, he might sprain an ankle, or even break one. He carefully moved farther down until he was only a few feet above the floor. Then he stepped off the wall. His weight had increased again. It was an effort just to turn and take a step away from the wall.
The wall. The lead in the wall acted as a shield.
Stupid thought. He couldn't break off a piece of wall. Couldn't get behind it. Couldn't even stay close to it, or he'd be stoned to death.
Think there has to be a way.
But if so, there was no evidence that anyone else had ever found it. How could he hope to succeed where hundreds, perhaps thousands of others had failed? What did he think made him special? As if it was a voice answering a direct question, Miller remembered Cook saying,
Miller had one chance in seven of survival.
One chance in seven. Not great odds, but at least they were odds. It said he could do it. He could beat this thing if only Cook had been telling the truth. Or what was the other thing Cook had said?
If story is truth, you have chance.
So why not assume it was true? If it wasn't, he was dead. If he believed in what Cook said, he had a chance. A documented, predetermined chance.
Believe that.
Miller told himself. Everything Cook had said about the artifact was the truth. It was a device of unknown origin that could alter time and space. Cook had been sent from the future to locate it, and he, Tony Miller, had been chosen to save the thing from Cook's enemies because he could do it. Computer simulations gave him a 1 in 7 chance of success. Simple. Believable. More than enough to pin his hope of survival on. Sure. But it was what he had, and as the villagers began to sound unhappy with his lack of movement, he took a deep breath. How many more of those did he have left? And stepped forward. He began a slow shuffle in the same arc Cook had tried, not getting closer to the artifact, but at least moving so the rocks would not come raining down upon him. Moving his feet just enough, shuffling forward as his brain whirled.
Cook knew,
he told himself.
Cook was from the future. Cook knew.
But what had Cook been able to do with his knowledge that was any different from all the others who died here? Cook's body was right there, lying next to the weird panel, dead like all the others. He died trying to reach the panel. Cook knew. The panel.
The panel!
End of chapter.